Hi, I'm Marco.
And I'm Heather.
We invite you on a journey of discovery as we explore techniques, tools, and inspiration to better our love lives and our sex lives.
Join us as we travel the world, seeking out the stories that can help improve how we do romance and relationships.
Come with us as we discover
how to love forever.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to How to Love Forever. This is our very first episode, and we are super excited to be here with you.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. So, yeah, this is our very first episode, and I'd love to greet all of our listeners, and thank you so much for being here.
All those millions of you.
Yes, the hundreds of millions of you already hanging out. And hey, if you're listening to us in the future because you're reading our backlog, you're checking out our backlog and listening to it, hey, welcome. It's never too late to join the party.
And you made it all the way to the beginning.
You really did. You made it all the way to the beginning. It's like Legend of Zelda or something. This is really cool. So yeah, this is the first podcast in a very long series, hopefully. And if you don't know what we've been doing on the social media, you should check out our Facebook/How to Love Forever, right? You can also follow us on the Instagram at @How2LoveForever. And there's a How to Love Forever webpage. It's a bit of a work in progress, but we're making it happen right now. Eventually, it's going to have all kinds of interactive things like quizzes and downloads and things like that. But for right now, we've just been concentrating on building up some content for the podcast and, you know, kind of getting this journey going.
Because we're all about the journey here. And as this is the first episode, we wanted to go ahead and get the boring stuff out of the way, which is essentially introduce ourselves and why we're here and what we're looking to share with you and gain in this adventure together.
Yeah, Heather. Well, I guess let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you're at and where you're coming from?
Well, I am a lifelong performer, and my unique experiences through childhood and as I've grown into adulthood has always led me to find relationship dynamics absolutely fascinating, which is why I'm here.
It's fabulous. What was it about your childhood that made you find relationship dynamics fascinating? Was there anything in particular or any series of things? Tell us about your parents.
Oh, no.
Is there any particular kind of things that you would like to divulge onto the world this early on? This is like the first date, too. I mean, so you don't have to like go full deep. This
is I'm not going to give you
like
everything.
All of a sudden,
that's
we're like,
sure.
You know, at a date at a cake factory or something, and, you know, we're like sitting around with coffee and dessert, and all of a sudden you're telling me about how like everyone was beheaded when you were three. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. We just keep it light. We can keep the Darth Vader stuff for later on. But
that's
honestly,
right. We're gonna get you guys to earn our trauma. But no, what it comes down to is I was raised pretty religiously. And when my parents got divorced when I was nine, our mother moved me and my siblings to join what turned out to be kind of a low-key cult. And we traveled around the country for several months waiting for the world to end. So yeah, that was definitely a difficult point, being ripped away from everything I had known, and all of my comforts and my foundation was completely gone. My siblings also were sent to different areas of the world, and it was just me pretty much feeling all alone. I'm pretty certain that helped me foster some pretty strong codependency issues at an early age. You know, that whole sense of fear of loss and abandonment.
How early age? When was this happening?
I was nine. Before that, my parents, obviously, they didn't have a very healthy relationship dynamic to learn from. Understanding how to set healthy boundaries, that wasn't something that my mother in particular was all about. To state it lightly.
So you were basically like just hanging out in a cult in the middle of the desert at the age of nine. And I mean, when you say low key, what do you mean by low key? I mean, it wasn't like you were stockpiling weapons or, you know, all going out into the jungle to drink some tea, was it?
No, there was no tea, although they were inordinately fond of wheatgrass sprouts with horseradish and olive oil.
No, yeah, that does sound like abuse.
Yeah, no, it was pretty awful. no, and there wasn't a stockpile of weapons, but there were guns and the whole sense of the government is after us because we know the truth and we are waiting for, you know, the second coming and for everybody else to be annihilated because we're the chosen ones, right? So there was no like sexual abuse. There, like, the cult lasted, gosh, like, I don't know, 6 months maybe we were part of it. And then it just, everybody ran out of money and had to go, and the world didn't end. So jobs had to happen.
It's funny how the world never ends.
It just keeps not ending.
Lucky us with that, because we get to come back around with yet another round of paranoia and prophetic mumbo jumbo to keep ourselves properly paranoid.
Yeah, it's easier to control people when they're all frightened, for sure.
They really are. Mm-hmm. They really are. And by they, I mean we, I suppose.
Well, we are, yes.
So you said that you learned by negative examples to seek out new ways to love better.
Yeah. So because of the whole lack of boundaries and creating that deep codependency, I found myself in a very unhealthy / abusive relationship in my early 20s. Mm. And yeah, it was terrible, of course, because, well, that shit sucks. However, because of what I went through and the fact that I'm fortunate enough to have access to resources and I started questioning things and I just knew that there had to be a better way. I started looking things up and I started living my life consciously and conscientiously. When I finally was able to get out, extract myself from that situation, I took it as an opportunity to practice, I guess. Hmm. All these things that I had figured would be healthy characteristics and healthy dynamics, and practice honesty with relationships that, you know, weren't the end all and be all of my world. They were just light, momentary connections.
You were screwing around.
Well, I was being a happy, happy hoe. Yeah. That's for sure. But it was a really great opportunity for me to put into practice these things that I felt were going to create a good, strong relationship, but with people who, you know, didn't super duper matter.
Mm-hmm. Sort of disposable relationships to practice concepts. Is that what you're trying to say?
Essentially.
I mean, not that disposable is derogatory, I suppose I could say instead. Things that were destined to be short-term.
Absolutely. I mean, I was short-term to them as well. Neither one of us in any of these situations were looking for anything long-term. And that was the whole thing about honesty. It was great.
That's what relationships are. They're a laboratory, every single one of them. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a one-night stand or whether it's a relationship that's been together for 60 years. Mm. It's a laboratory. I like to say it's half laboratory and half temple. Mm. It's a temple for two, because you get to learn a lot of stuff about yourself. There's a lot of inner work that gets done. If you're in a relationship, it's the perfect place for you to learn about your ego and its boundaries, for example. Or
absolutely.
Yeah. Or what kinds of brokenness you have in you that are infiltrating the relationship. Mm-hmm. There's definitely litmus tests that happen in relationships. And these are things that we're going to be covering in episodes to come, mm-hmm. obviously. But yeah, laboratories.
Relationships are laboratories. Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to make clear that I'm saying laboratories and not lavatories. You don't want to pee all over your relationship, okay? Unless you're really into that and it's consensual. You really don't need to be introducing lavatory behavior into like what would be a more vanilla kind of relationship. Unless you're actually bathing the other person in vanilla, and that's, you know, more of a food kink. But anyway, yes, a laboratory.
Well, vanilla smells great.
It does smell great.
Like this candle we have here.
Yum, yum.
So my mother had given me this set of hippy-dippy fortune-telling sort of cards a while back, and similar to horoscopes and all that sort of thing. And it's supposed to tell you about yourself. And one of the things that I did appreciate about it, and it stuck with me over all these years, is that I, as a person, and I'm sure all of us do, but I learn through my relationships. You know, relationships are like mirrors. The people that we interact with are mirrors of our own brokenness, of our own health, of our own idiosyncrasies. So what people are reflecting at us, reflecting to us in our dynamics together, that's telling us something about ourselves, that if it's dysfunctional, we really need to adjust and address.
So you're saying that one's partner at any given moment is basically like a barometer, as you will, of your own individual state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can fly with that. Yeah, I can totally fly with that. Yeah, well, that goes with being the laboratory. It goes with being the temple. It's mm-hmm. also the mirror, you mm-hmm. know. And there are plenty of other relationship metaphors that we could bring in here. Relationships are like wings, or relationships are like, you know, cozy blanket, all of these things.
And maybe we'll have a whole episode on all of the metaphors of relationships, kind of break them down.
It'd oh, be man, funny. I'm totally going to write that down right now. Yeah, thank you very much for sharing that information with us. Obviously, as your lifelong partner, we've covered some of this stuff already.
Yeah.
But it's
nice. I hope this isn't news to you, babe.
Well, if it is, I haven't been listening very well, huh?
I just want to be heard.
You just want to be heard. And I got my ears plugged up going, nee, 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 nee. But yeah, no, that's one of the things that I don't really hardly ever think about with you, because you are so well adjusted and you have taken these sort of negative examples and used your own feminine strength, your own willpower, your own human capacity to transcend from even that early age, even when you were, you know, in your early teens and what have you, going through these experimental dating phases, etc. It's very obvious that you already had a certain amount of agency to yourself, which is one of the reasons that I fell in love with you. That's one of the reasons I became attracted to you. It's because I was like, okay, this girl's hot. And also, she is really strong. And also, she's really, you know, got it together. So anyway.
I appreciate that. Obviously, life is a constant work in progress. And we've been together now for, gosh, going on 15 years.
It's amazing you haven't killed me yet.
I know. Yeah. Well, I'm very easygoing.
She has tried a couple of times, though. Help. Send help.
Not on purpose. But enough about me, Marco. Why are you here? What intrigues you? And what are you so passionate about when it comes to relationships and love and all that? Why are you here?
I'm here to complicate things.
Yes.
I am here in the space that I am today because of the person I was when I was a kid. I think you and I share some similarities from our formative years. My story is different, but there are definitely a couple of themes that run across there that I think are the things that we have in common that have put us on this trajectory mutually. You say you were a survivor of low-key cults and crap relationship stuff, you know, and, you know, me too, for that matter. I'm a bit of a survivor of a mid-level family abuse situation. When I first came to the United States at the age of 10, I came from a very, very wonderful, very large, very peaceful, blue-collar Mexican family. When I came to the United States, I kind of dropped into my mother's life, where she had gotten herself involved with another man who is not my father. He's my half-brother's father. And he was a bit of an alcoholic and a wife beater and a child beater, things like that. It's not something that I usually talk about, nothing that I, you know, try to dwell on or anything. Certainly it has colored a lot of my life regarding my issues of trust and things like that, but it is what it is and I am functional. But yeah, there is no, there's no denying that it was mid-level family abuse. I saw that guy beating on my mom a few times. I saw him beating on my brother a few times. He beat on me a few times. And this is just what broken people do in order to break other people, because misery loves company.
Yeah, it's awful. It's absolutely awful.
Yeah.
And did you come to the U.S. to live with your mom out of choice, or what happened that brought you into that situation?
At the age of 10, you don't really have a lot of choice of your life. You're just somebody else's property at that point. So at that point, really, it was my mother bade me come, as it were.
Ah.
You know, she had spent a lot of her life kind of saving up money and working in the United States, becoming a citizen, all of these things so that she could provide a better life for me. And by the time she was able to, I already had a brother and a stepdad. And so I kind of sort of came and plugged into that situation. And it was a very large culture shock, migrating from a very traditional Latin upbringing, little town life kind of thing, you know, dirt street, playing soccer with all the neighborhood kids, all of that, to this sort of fantasy futuristic technoscape that was Houston in the 70s. And so it was quite a culture shock, really, especially dropped into what you would call like a, you know, extremely average, like American family style. Two parents, barely, just one sibling, and a massive amount of dysfunction.
Yeah, that must have been terrifying and incredibly isolating.
It really was. And for years, probably the first 10 years that I was here in the United States, I cried myself to bed every single night. I was praying to God to just take me back home, with tears in my eyes every night.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
I had nightmares of my stepfather breaking into my room in the middle of the night and beginning to beat me, like pretty much nightly. It was no bueno, but also it is one of the fires that made me who I am now, the crucibles.
Yeah, absolutely. So because of that, how did that affect your relationships as you started going into puberty and then young adulthood and all that?
No, I was a dick. I was lashing back. It also doesn't help that after my stepdad was out of the picture, my mother kind of went down this rabbit hole of like retaliatory serial relationships that were all, how can I put this nicely, textbook examples of what not to do.
Real good examples.
It was a textbook example of what not to do, and that's one of the things I credit her for in my upbringing, is showing me a lot of ways to not run a relationship, to not treat other people. I'm gonna just put it on the table right here. I love her. She's great. I don't think she should have ever been a mom, and I'm pretty certain she knows that too. So she did her best.
So many.
Yeah, so many. Mm-hmm. So she did her best, and I partially credit her for me being the person I am now. I also think that I did a lot of raising myself on my own. I also helped raise my brother, who's out there somewhere. Love you, dude. But because I was a witness to such a long line of crap relationships where it was like dysfunction, she was always seeking something that I don't know how realistic it was. I don't know if she even knew what she was seeking. But I thought to myself, that's not what I'm going to do.
Was she seeking a fantasy?
I don't know. So many people seek ideals. They're looking for, I don't know, they're looking for what they read on some magazine cover. Mm-hmm. They're looking for something that's on a song. They're looking for the end of a Hallmark movie.
Those narratives that are fed to us but aren't realistic and set us all up for disappointment and failure.
Yeah, set most of us up. I'm sure some people can naturally gravitate toward those kind of outcomes, but those aren't the only outcomes to have. Those aren't realistic outcomes for most of us, and they're not even the preferred outcome. Heck, most pop songs are an absolute shit show of negative examples.
Oh my God. Honestly, most love songs are just the absolute epitome of unhealthy relationship dynamics, and it drives me insane.
Yes.
Absolutely insane.
So getting back to your question as to, you know, what did that turn me into?
Yeah.
Yeah, I turned into a little bit of a jerk. I had like a thirst for attention. And in my 20s especially, but also into my early 30s, I feel that I can honestly say that I was using the fact that I was a relatively good-looking guy, relatively capable and fit, to get a lot of sexual attention to compensate for the fact that I didn't really get a lot of loving attention earlier on in life.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of
healthy
it when I was
love.
Yeah, exactly. Plenty of the grounded, healthy love when I was being raised by my grandparents. But I feel, especially in comparison and contrast, going from that to where I came to land in the United States, it was definitely such a shock that that was a compensating factor in my life, my psychology. I became an attention whore. A lot of it was just this flat-out sexual attention whore. And when I say I was an absolute jerk, I was. I mistreated ladies. Not in a physical way, but I was just an egotistical schmuck. A product of the broken male upbringings of the times. I did plenty of making girls cry, and that's stupid. I don't want to do that. I want to be the right kind of person. However, there's something that happened like later on in my life that got me on a path of wanting to be a more conscious lover. And that was the person I was with right before you, tell you the truth. And we've been together for almost 15 years now, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same thing goes with you. You had a less than ideal relationship that was full of negative examples.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we both did. We were both having these horrendous relationships with, I like to say, that we all get that one relationship, that one crazy, intense, overly dramatic, abusive, wild relationship that for some reason was super, super attractive at the beginning, but then it just becomes like this rabbit hole of ever descending levels of hell, you know? And that's the one that I was having, you know, before you and I met. And I believe you were having something similar happening. But that relationship is the one that made me really think about what the heck I was doing, you know? My brokenness was interacting with other people's brokenness, and two otherwise decent human beings were rubbing each other wrong in disastrous ways.
It's kind of like each other's dysfunctions fit in and stimulate and aggravate the other's dysfunctions, and it becomes this spiraling down of more and more unhealthy patterns and chaos.
Yeah, it's like these puzzle pieces, you know? They just perfectly lock together. Your brokenness and their brokenness just sort of like fill each other's edges in such a way that you feel more complete when you're doing it, which is why you get addicted to that relationship.
Well, it's stimulating.
Sure. Yeah. It's like a virus and has those protein chains that connect with the protein receptors in your cells, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or like a drug has protein chains on it that connect with those protein receptors in your cells. And that's where addiction comes from, and it is a very bad symbiotic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That is 100% what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Everyone gets one. If you're lucky, you get one of those nasty ass drama relationships.
And if you get more than one, it may be, again, going back to the whole mirror thing, if you continue to have these really dysfunctional relationships, what is it about ourselves that we are not addressing? What is it that we are not fixing?
Yeah.
Healing with ourselves.
Because if it's the same problem over and over again with different people, then maybe the problem's you.
Mm-hmm. Which we don't want to hear.
Nobody wants to hear that. And that's where the entire sacred temple lesson of getting rid of your ego happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where it comes from. You got to get rid of your ego in order to properly work relationships, because it's not about you. It's about creating something greater than either of you together.
I fully agree. And I think within relationships, we get this opportunity to become the best versions of ourselves possible if we're in a healthy relationship. So I'm curious, though, that it took that particular unhealthy relationship. Was it just the most extreme out of all of them? Is it the stage of life that you were at, that you had learned enough about yourself, that you'd gained enough emotional intelligence? Like, what was it about that particular point in your life that led you to be a more conscious and conscientious lover?
I think it's a combination of both things. That's a really good question. There was a bit of, I finally grew up enough, but then there was also the aspect of this relationship being so much more of a crazy ride than the usual relationship for me that I was absolutely blown away. It forced me to really reevaluate myself and assess myself. In previous relationships where I mentioned I've been the jerk, I mean, yeah, I'll fully own up to it, but, you know, I wasn't really being an abuser or anything. I was just being a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, standard boy problem as opposed
standard
to...
young person problem often.
You're right. Standard young person problem. And that comes with its own bag of crap that you need to sort out and look through, et cetera. But I suppose because for me, pickings were plenty, I didn't. I just moved on and had a great time being fabulous somewhere else, you know? But with this particular relationship, it was a feeling of entrapment. I was trapped. And quite honestly, if I'm going to be honest, she probably felt trapped too. There was that addiction aspect to it. And I don't know if I've encountered addiction in a romantic sense before. That relationship was addictive. It was not good, but it was a rush.
Mm-hmm.
It was potentially deadly. I mean, she came at me with knives and stuff. And, you know, I was obviously always the problem. But, you know, yeah, sometimes I was the problem. And, you know, just as often she was too. I wasn't the violent one in it, but also I was exercising my brokenness all over the relationship, just like she was. So when that came to a burning, smoldering end, I took a really good look at myself. And I did not like what I saw. I saw my life through the filter of the new social demands upon men of the time. You know, sort of like Me Too kind of consciousness. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm going to forgive myself for the jerk I've been in the past, but I'm also going to make sure I never do that again. So great. It came time to learn how to be a proper relationship driver or passenger.
Participant.
A proper relationship participant. Yeah,
that's partner. A good
one. Partner. Customer, a relationship customer.
No.
Welcome to the girlfriend experience.
No. That might be trademarked.
Yeah. Hey, if you own the trademark to the girlfriend experience, you owe us money because we just promoted your show. So anyway.
No, but that's really interesting. It's something that just occurred to me. When I got out of my super unhealthy relationship, I took a year to myself where I was being, you know, happy, happy ho, and figuring out who I was and doing the journaling and all that. But figuring out who I was without the standards imposed on me by family or a boyfriend or a romantic partner of any kind or society. Just right. What matters to me, right?
Writing your own rules.
Writing my own rules. But however, the high that I was on right after I got out of that abusive, unhealthy dynamic. And of course, I wasn't fixed when I left the relationship. I had so much work to do. But I was riding such a high because I was finally free after all those years.
Right.
And I was being an arrogant jerk. I really was. I shat all over some friendships. I made some really stupid choices and was just being a sloppy, messy little bitch. So, but because of that, and I burned what you were talking about, like the smoldering heap that was your previous relationship.
Yeah.
I kind of did that with some friendships. And it was after that. And it was several months after I got out of my romantic relationship. But the friendships, that is actually what forced me to take an even deeper look at myself and realize what a jerk I was being and the steps I needed to take to live and be a more conscientious person, living with integrity and all that good stuff.
And there it is. So yeah, for me, it was right after the smoldering ash heap of a bad relationship. But for you, it was kind of coming to reckoning with your behavior after the relationship then. More than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, because I think I was playing the victim, you know, right when I got out of that relationship, because it was terrible. I was in my mid-20s at that point, and obviously everything is about me. Mm-hmm. And I finally had the chance to, like, I'd never been on my own. You know, I'd gone from my mom's house to living with this guy.
Right. And so you had no quote unquote adult training?
No, I had no sense of individual self. So I got very cocky and egotistical with it all.
Mm.
So I was grateful. I mean, it was terrible and it hurt all the things that happened. But that's honestly, that's training for you.
That is. It's the crucibles
mm-hmm.
by which we are molded and beaten into a fine and perfectly sharp sword that we are.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
As we try to make it through here. So love is a bit of a labyrinth,
mm-hmm.
but there are these universal truths that I feel are applicable to nearly every relationship. Whether you have a traditional man-woman heterosexual relationship, or whether you're in a gay relationship, or a lesbian relationship, or a polyamorous couple, or throuple, or quintuple, or sextuple, or whatever it is that your relationship style and your sexual preference are, there are these sort of golden rules. And I feel that that is the essence and the mission of our podcast
mm-hmm.
is to discover those together and share them with the world. To that effect, we invite all of our listeners to chime in.
Yes, please.
Please comment on our podcast page. Please comment on our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/How to Love Forever, all one word.
Facebook.com/How to Love Forever.
Yeah, all of that. Facebook.com/How to Love Forever. Here's a little bit of a breakdown of what our listeners can expect on an episode-by-episode basis.
So in the next few episodes, we will be talking about some of the more mainstream strategies for supporting healthy relationship dynamics, the 5 love languages, you know, the basics, right?
We're going to be sharing an episode about like how to tell if you're in a dysfunctional relationship.
We have some fun on-the-spot interviews with people on the street about sex and love.
There's going to be some discussion about alternative relationship structures.
We get to talk about the history of relationships through the ages and what those times can teach us.
And we're even going to go deep. We're going to go into self-pleasure.
Mm.
Oh, baby, yeah. Is it cheating?
No.
Or is it healthy?
Depends.
There you go. That's a one-word podcast right there. No. Yeah, and we're going to top off the first season with a wonderful interview with Dr. Amanda Morgan, PhD, who is a sexologist and a professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas campus. We have a fantastic conversation with her about sexual health and personal liberation through sexuality.
It's such a good conversation.
It's an amazing conversation.
We wanted to talk for hours and hours. We really didn't want to finish it.
In fact, it's so long that we're going to share it in a 2-part series because it is that good and that full of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that you can look forward to in the upcoming episodes. I think that this is probably enough from us for now.
I think this is plenty. I feel good as a first date, and I'm down to grab another drink in the future if you are.
Yeah, let's grab another drink in the future and discuss the mysteries and magic of love and relationships.
Sounds great.
Well, dear friends, thank you very much for joining us. Remember our Facebook page, How to Love Forever. Remember our Instagram, How2Love Forever. And of course, you can take a look at us on Podbean and wherever your fine podcasts are distributed.
Feel free to share this with your friends and loved ones. And we are on Patreon at How to Love Forever. You find us there if you feel like becoming a Patreon. Sweet. We've got all sorts of things available for you at all different tiers.
If you fancy yourself a supporter of your arts, we are an easy way to express that. So anyway, we want to thank you for your time.
So we'll see you next week. And as always,
love hard,
love deep, love forever.